Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. I say all-new every week because it is. We keep modifying and improving every week, making sure that it's doing what you need and want, and as you explore the world of real estate and home ownership. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, and even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and now Boston, Massachusetts. This show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. I encourage you to call them today at 633-3700 and ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs and wants, and that is guaranteed. And also ask about our many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk, to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. So call Hunt Mortgage today, 633-3700, for a personalized, customized, knock-your-socks-off service. And check out that low rate and closing cost guarantee. Don't forget about the first ever 24/7, 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, and even out to Boston and Phoenix, Arizona. Simply dial 716-631-4800, enter the street number of the house you want to know about. No matter whose listing it is, and the hotline will prompt you with a choice of street names. Select the one you want, you'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that particular property, all automatically and just that fast, anytime, in any market we serve on any listing, whether it's ours or any other brokers. You know, you might be thinking, well, I'll just go online and check Zillow or something like that. You can do that. But if you're driving by a house and you see a sign, no matter whose it is, just plug in those numbers, 631-4800, into your cell phone and wait a couple seconds, and you'll hear something all about that house and then be texted a link all privately and just that fast. We're in the spring market, although sometimes it doesn't feel like it outside. And, of course, throughout the entire country, there's a shortage of homes available that anyone who's looking for a house today knows. And we have a very significant number of very high qualified buyers for homes today. And if you're thinking about selling, there may be never have been a better time. I was talking to some people this week about what's going on here in Buffalo. I was in another part of the country, and they were saying, well, isn't Buffalo a very inexpensive market? And I said, relatively speaking, I would say that's true. But because of the demand, we're seeing rather exceptional things taking place in neighborhoods that in the past we might not have thought we'd see those kind of prices. And it's happening right now, right here in Western New York. And a lot of it's because of what we're going to be talking about here today, which is something that we all should know a great deal about. And that is part of our heritage here in Western New York, which is the Olmsted Parks. But before we get to that, I want to remind everybody that Hunt Real Estate is the official real estate and relocation provider for our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and the Rochester Americans, and watch the moves that are taking place with those teams. It means a lot for us here in Western New York. But as I said just a moment ago, we want to talk today about an element of our community that I think we all take for granted to some extent, and that is our Olmsted Park system. And here to discuss that with me is the head of that system, Stephanie Crockett. Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning, Peter. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you back. We've got a lot of good stuff going on, but before we get to all that in the parks, give us a little history. I mean, I think about people that might be listening take it for granted. They drive by these beautiful parks and say, well, it's always been there. It's great. You know, isn't this wonderful? And we got a highway running right through one of them, and which is wonderful, too. But actually, more than one of them, as you know only too well. But give us... who was Frederick Olmsted, and what did he mean to Buffalo?
Well, Frederick Law Olmsted was the famous landscape architect, and actually he's considered the father of landscape architecture. He designed Central Park, which is probably his most famous accomplishment. But he had done Central Park and Prospect Park and was getting a lot of notoriety. And so a wonderful politician and businessman here in Buffalo named William Dorsheimer, who was only 34 years old at the time, had the vision to bring Olmsted to Buffalo and to ask him what he thought about designing a park here. And when Olmsted came in 1868, he took a look around. They showed him three pieces of property, and he said, you know, this could be a park system, not just one park. And he convinced them. And so that's what we're celebrating this year, is 150 years since Olmsted came to Buffalo and convinced city leaders that we needed the nation's very first urban park system. And the city grew into the park system. So that's when people coined the phrase that we have a city within a park. That's what it was. The parks at first were kind of the suburbs, and the city grew into them. And today we have a system that is 6 major parks, 7 parkways, 8 circles, and we have 3 smaller spaces.
That's really remarkable. And in the context of the rest of the country, where does our park system fit?
Well, in the context of other park systems, Olmsted went on to design probably only 4 more that are still in contact. So you've got a park system that's smaller in Milwaukee. You've got the Emerald Necklace, which has some notoriety in Boston. There's a park system in Louisville, which is quite extensive. And then there's another one out in Seattle.
And Central Park, of course.
Central Park, but it's not a park system. It's one huge, huge park. And actually, Central Park's acreage is about the equivalent as to our entire park system.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's pretty remarkable.
It is.
Thank God they saved that much of the city.
I know.
Because otherwise, it's a concrete jungle. But anyway, am I correct in my reading and memory of what I read anyway? Didn't Olmsted call this the best planned city in America before he started the system?
He did.
Which is pretty remarkable, if you think about that.
He did. He called it that. The city was designed by Ellicott, and it has a radial design, which is very similar to European cities, as well as Ellicott designed Washington, D.C. So, yes.
So now we're 150 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Describe some of the major events, good and bad, over the last 150 years that kind of bring us up to today.
Well, it's interesting. As we're trying to explore what the 150th means, I think we saw a boom probably in the 1800s from 1868 through probably when the parks were actually shovels in the ground being developed through the 70s. You know, it actually took 40 years to build the entire system. So we have seen ups and downs, and I would say that we've gone through periods of decline. One of the most significant, I think, periods of decline was in the 60s, the 50s and 60s. For those people that lived in the city at that time, I did not, but I hear amazing stories of how the parks were almost unsafe at one point. And so the Conservancy started in 1978 and came together and decided we needed to protect these parks and the legacy and the history that Olmsted brought to value here in Buffalo. And so we've been working for 40 years to restore as much as we can, and we've got a master plan that's probably, 200 pages thick of projects that we would like to see. And we've just been trying to knock off as much of it as we can and bring quality of life back to Buffalo.
So our conservancy, I believe, was modeled after the one in New York. Is that correct?
Yes. The actual conservancy is a nonprofit, was modeled after Central Park Conservancy, yes.
And in terms of its practical application, I don't think, my memory served me correctly, that although the Conservancy was created in the 70s in New York, that the real citizen involvement didn't happen till probably 15 or 20 years ago when they started, you know, you could adopt a chunk of the park, and all of a sudden things changed radically. Mm-hmm. So describe that process.
So the Conservancy was more of an advocacy nonprofit for a long time, just advocating the protection of the parks. And in 2004, we were given the unique opportunity to actually maintain the parks as well as advocate for them. So our mission became a dual role. And so in 2004, it was, I believe, the county and the city that had merged a bit on the parks. And then in 2010, we renewed the relationship basically with just the city of Buffalo and continued that amazing public-private partnership that we have today. We're actually going to be going into renewing that contract for the future this year. And I think that it's been very important for the city because the city can only do so much. The tax dollars only go so far, and they provide us with about 40% of our annual budget. The Conservancy has to make up the other 60% every year, and we start from scratch every year because we don't have an endowment. So we're constantly trying to look for the best partnerships, and that's why we've started offering opportunities for companies as well as private citizens to help us.
And how big a budget do you have?
Our budget is $3.4 million. Mm-hmm. So the city gives us about 1.1 to 1.4, depending on how well we do with some of our fundraising. Mm-hmm. And we have to make up the rest.
And how do you go about that?
Private donations, corporate partnerships, mm-hmm. And a lot of grants, and trying to work with not only just the local nonprofits, but also the state.
Mm-hmm. So there it really is a true public-private partnership.
In every way, shape, and form, yep.
And relatively speaking, I mean, that's a lot of money, $3.4 million, but relative to the, I guess if you took the entire footprint of the park system and you divided it on a per square foot basis, really not that much money.
Well, when you look at it that way, yes. No, not that much money. Right now, we have an operational gap. So what the city gives us compared to what we've got to raise to fill that just for maintenance, not for anything else, not the projects or any of the restorations, just maintenance, we're trying to capture another $400,000 a year. Mm-hmm. We have to capture that first to keep all of the maintenance going before we can get into the special projects. That winds up being, I don't know, when you consider our acreage is close to 1,000 or 1,000 acres, if you looked at it that way, it's about $800. Is that what it was? $400? Yeah, per person. It doesn't seem like a whole lot.
Let me see. $400,000.
1,000 acres.
1,000 acres. That's
$400. Doesn't seem like a whole lot.
No. $400
per
an acre.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody who could maintain their property for $400 an acre is doing a pretty good job, in my mind.
Well, that's just our gap. So when you consider that the million the city gives us is actually compounded onto that, mm-hmm. But if we could just find 1,000 donors to give us $400, that would make up the maintenance gap right there.
Well, there you go.
There's
the pitch. We're into it early. That's good. We can keep repeating that in various forms throughout the show. Our mission on this show, Stephanie, as I repeat every week, is to help our listeners protect and enhance their investment in real mm-hmm. estate right here in our community, and really all the communities we serve. And part of that, and I think, as I mentioned earlier, what we take for granted here in this community is pretty ridiculous. Again, in my mind, I know that other cities in upstate would die to have what we have. Mm-hmm. And it never ceases to amaze me when people from Rochester come here, or Syracuse, which they do for just with our own company, and they marvel at what how green it is, and mm-hmm. how what the opportunity is just to get outside and not be outside of the city.
Right.
It's all right inside the city, and how much exposure we have to water and greenery and open spaces that really doesn't exist. Are there really comparable cities anywhere in this country in terms of the relationship of the population itself to greenery? Do you do any studies like that at all?
You know, the Trust for Public Land does a lot of those studies. Mm-hmm. So does the City Parks Alliance, which is run out of Denver. And there are cities that are a bit greener, mm-hmm. with ribbons of green that connect everything.
Those are kind of, in my mind, some of those are sort of artificial, these green belts that they create. And they create winners and losers in our business. If
yes.
you're on the wrong side of the green belt, you're toast. If you're on the right side of the green belt, like in Portland, Oregon, you're a millionaire. And it's in my mind, that's government picking winners and losers, where our system really isn't like that at all.
No, our system runs 32 miles from Riverside Park all the way down to South Park. And there's amazing features within each one of them. And every park is within a different community. Almost. We have our own little world of the Olmsted parks, and we're finding that certain parks fit different lifestyles with different activities happening. And you've got to balance all that and keeping the green connection going. When Olmsted designed the system originally, it was just Front, Delaware, MLK, and then you had all the parkways that connected those in the circles. And people could literally walk from park to park and never actually leave green space, which was the whole concept. And we've lost a few of those connections over time, but truly, people can still bike the whole system.
Mm-hmm.
They can run the whole system, and we want to see those connections restored.
Which is truly remarkable if you do think about it, that in a city you can actually do that.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think, going back to the our mission here and what we're really all about, which I think you're about kind of the same thing, there is a direct relationship between your proximity to these parks and the value of real estate. You and I talked a little bit about that last year and tried a little project, which we'll try again this year to see if we can't inspire some people who benefit from this every single day visually and from a standard of living standpoint. But it is you can draw concentric circles around our park system and around our waterfront. And you know, the closer you are to the center of that circle, the greater the value. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't really dissipate that much and that quickly.
No. No, and actually the Trust for Public Land did a study, and they're actually using a metric right now of a 10-minute walk. So if you can walk to a major park or park facility with just a 10-minute exercise, they feel that that is kind of what, for a lack of a better word, kind of the park shed, you know, like a watershed. Mm-hmm. The park shed spreads out 10 minutes.
And I think that's entirely reasonable. You know, living very near the park, one of the parks as I do, it's always interesting to me to watch the activity, which I can do. And it's shocking to me. If there's a patch of blue up in the sky, it's like people come out of the woodwork. It doesn't matter how cold it is.
No, actually, our offices are in Delaware Park over at the Parkside Lodge. And I will say that anytime there is sunshine, we've had even snow still on the ground, and we'll see people out with golf clubs just trying to chip just to swing their arms and keep moving. Mm-hmm. And we've got joggers and walkers and dog walkers everywhere. Doesn't matter how cold.
So before we go to the break, got a few minutes here, talk a little bit about the 150th anniversary and its significance and what, I guess, the Conservancy is doing about all that.
Well, to what we've been talking about, the biggest thing that we find from market research on just the park system is that people don't understand that there is an entire park system. And that one park, they'll think of it, well, that's my park, but they don't understand it's an Olmsted park and it's part of a greater system and it's something to be celebrated. So for this year, we're going to be focusing on awareness and just drawing attention to the fact that we have the nation's first urban park system here in Buffalo. It's a huge point of pride, and that we have so many people that are right on the fabric of it. And on the fringe, and they need to be connected and understand who their neighbors are and what this park system means. So we're going to have, we're going to just have 2 points in time this year. We're going to have a week in April, and we're going to have a weekend in August. So we're kind of doing it as bookends. But in April, we're considering that Olmsted Education Week, and that is running from Earth Day to Arbor Day. And in between, we've got Olmsted's birthday, and he would have been 196. So we're going to have a lot of educational opportunities happening there. We are developing an app for the Olmsted Park so that people can understand wayfinding and how to get from park to park, and the different features and amenities within each park. And then we're also going to be bringing back a piece of history, one that we have not been able to reclaim physically. We're working with Damon College, and we're going to bring back the Quarry Garden, which was outside Parkside Lodge. It was a lost landscape. It used to be a beautiful 25-foot-deep quarry. Actually, the quarry rock was used in building the bear exhibit at the zoo. We still have some rock outcroppings there that kind of linger. But have you seen those bridges in front of Parkside Lodge?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They used to span a quarry. They weren't just, because it seems weird now to have bridges with...
Going nowhere.
Exactly. Yeah. So
The government's famous for that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the construction of the 198 filled in the quarry, and two golf holes were built on top of it. But we're working with Damon College. They're actually putting together an augmented reality feature. And when you come to the park, you'll be able to pull up your phone or your pad or whatever people use these days and be able to see that landscape 100 years ago.
Really?
We're doing it all digitally.
I'm assuming there's photographs.
Oh, yeah. Yes, we've actually had several doctoral thesis students that have done research on the Quarry Garden. So we have amazing archival photographs and information.
So you've got 2 points of awareness, or that's what you call them?
Yep.
Okay, so the first, what dates are those in April?
So April 21st, we're going to be helping Waterkeeper with Hoyt Lake. Doing their shoreline sweep that they do every year. And then we're going to have a couple projects happening in the park system as well. So Earth Day is really the 22nd, but that's a whole weekend of cleanups. Mm-hmm. And then we're also going to be celebrating Olmsted's birthday. Frank Kowski, who wrote the book, The Best Planned City in the World, mm-hmm. The Library of American Landscape History is republishing his book as a second edition in paperback. Mm-hmm. And Frank's going to do a book signing for us on Olmsted's birthday, and we're actually going to be distributing books to the different high school libraries as our gift. And then on Arbor Day, which is the Friday mm-hmm. of that week, we're going to be announcing the feasibility study on the Arboretum restoration in South Park and what that will mean to the community. And we have some wonderful expert panelists that are going to come in and explain what an arboretum is, what the cultural tourism value is for an arboretum, what the scientific value is. And we're going to have a nice discussion as we then go into South Park. And the Western New York Arborist Association is going to be taking down some of the dead trees, mostly ash, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to plant some trees because you can't have Arbor Day without planting trees.
You got to do that. when we come back, I want you to talk about your involvement with the university and what the study is going to be.
Yes.
I know that's the same study, or is that some?
It's a different one. That's for our master plan.
Okay.
Yep.
I want to talk about that because I think there's hopefully that'll put some context around the whole system for all of us sometime in the not-too-distant
yes.
future.
Yes.
And we'll be right back with more from our house years after these very important messages.
If you're a homeowner age 62 or older, you owe it to yourself to look into a reverse mortgage. Reverse mortgages give seniors many different options to access the equity in their home. There's even a reverse mortgage for purchase available. For more information, call Karen Johnson, a reverse mortgage specialist at Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700 or visit huntmortgage.com. Karen Johnson, NMLS number 485939. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, that supplies you with unique and distinctive mortgage programs. And you might have noticed in the press this week that the Federal Reserve raised interest rates again, and they're promising more raises. And while the impact on our mortgage interest rates is not direct and immediate, it's mostly happens before then because the bond market anticipates what's going to happen, basically because the Fed tells everybody what's going to happen, and so the bond market anticipates that. So the interest rate increase has already been built into the mortgage market for the most part. But having said all that, we were talking yesterday about history of mortgage rates and the fact that up until really just several years ago, kind of in the post-recession era when the government stepped in and really manipulated the interest rate markets, a 5% interest rate on a mortgage was ridiculously low and almost unheard of until the last, say, 10 or 12 years. Now we have really a whole generation of people out there that think that anything above 4 is ridiculous. I mean, how could we possibly buy a house if it's a 4% or more? But you've got to educate yourself, and we're happy to help with that. So call Hunt Mortgage today at 633-3700, because what you're going to see happening as interest rates creep way up, you know, way above 4%, maybe approaching 5%, you're going to see the reintroduction of products that we used when interest rates were 18% and 17%, things called adjustable rate mortgages, which are now might be 5 or 10% of the mortgage market. They might creep up to 30%, but it's an opportunity for you to lock in an interest rate that will seem sub-market for 7 years. I mean, it's incredible opportunities out there, and you've got to educate yourself, but there's never been a better time like right now, especially with Hunt Mortgage's pre-purchase commitment. So call them today, 633-3700. Learn about the mortgage market. Learn how what various products you might qualify for that would allow you to take advantage of what are still historically low rates, but also even effectively get under those rates through various products that we have to offer. So call today, 633-3700, one of the co-sponsors of this show. And if you just have a general inquiry about anything relative to real estate, call the only customer service center for real estate in North America, the Hunt Customer Service Center, 633-9400. And we'll either answer your question right there on the phone or direct you to the appropriate professional that will answer those calls and those questions. And whether it's about buying or selling a home, financing a home, insuring a home, or even fixing up the one you have, that's the Hunt Customer Service Center. And remember, our guarantee stands. If you have a home to sell, we will sell your home, or ERA will buy it. That's the seller security plan, the only and most, aggressive guarantee of its kind in the marketplace today. And that's available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA agent. And stop into one of our many open houses this week and ask our agents about that seller security plan, how it could work for you. We have a very special show for you today. In the studio with me today is Stephanie Crockett. Stephanie happens to head a great organization here in town, the Olmsted Conservancy. And we've been talking about, first of all, in our first segment, the extent of our park system and what's going on there relative to the 150th anniversary. But there's a lot more going on, Stephanie. So let's kind of dig a little deeper into what you do all day long beyond raise money. But really what you're doing to and the vision of your organization for the future of the parks.
So we've got a mission to preserve, restore, enhance, and maintain the parks. We take on the maintenance part, and that's only been for 14 years where we've done the maintenance. So if you've seen park improvements, a lot of that is because we've directly been maintaining the parks. But the other part of our mission with the advocacy and what I will say is the preservation and the historic restoration of Olmsted's legacy in this park system is kind of governed by a master plan, which we call the Plan for the 21st Century. And this was a plan that evolved through a relationship with the University of Buffalo through the School of Architecture and Planning. Bob Shibley was a huge help to us in the development and the publication of that plan. We won awards through the American Planning Association for that plan. And that's kind of our guideline. We have a master plan for each one of the parks, the parkways and the circles. And then we follow those priorities as to what we need to get done. That's how we focus our different funding asks and our maintenance procedures. We try to take care of the park first. And the one thing that we're really trying to do more of is that any investment that we're going to make into one of the restorations or the amenities is to make sure that there is maintenance funding that goes along with that, so that whatever we're putting into the ground or changing or fixing as a building, that has a sustaining mechanism for maintenance, because we don't want to become a burden.
And that's kind of critical. And as you know, in the past, lots of institutions would raise money for a project and then build that project or create that project or whatever they're going to do. And then 2 years later, 3 years later, something breaks or, you know, normal deterioration takes place over time. And they say, well, how are we going to fund that? And it's much harder if you're fundraising to go back and ask for money again,
right,
for something that you asked money for in the first place, which is why many organizations are doing what you're doing, which is to not just plan to fix something or build something or change something or restore something, but how that will be maintained the way we want it to be maintained over its lifetime.
Yes, and we agree, because the what we're asking from private citizens and corporations and foundations for support of these projects is a huge investment. And so we're stewarding that investment as well as Olmsted's legacy. So,
you know, we talk a lot about what's going on and the various needs in our community on this show, and also the competing needs. And this is really a and everybody's cause, so to speak, in their minds should be the number one cause, or at least fit close to the top somewhere. How do you position the park system in people's minds?
That's a really good question, how we position it. I think that goes to our awareness campaign that we're going through this year. We want to understand more about what park users are doing in the parks. We're going to be doing some surveys with the University of Buffalo this year. We're trying to put together a five-year priority recap on our master plan for each one of the parks. And so we're going to be reaching out into the community very actively this year, working with block clubs and neighborhoods and user groups to find out exactly how they're using the parks, what they see is important for the parks, not only now but in the future, and really try to generate a better idea of what we need to be doing for the public and enhancing and preserving these parks over the next 5 years.
So, again, it's a it's competition in many respects.
In some regards, but I mean, I know that
when you're finally talking to somebody that you're
Yes, I'm sure the people that play soccer for Delaware Soccer believe the soccer fields are more important than the baseball fields and whatever. But we've got to look at it as comprehensively, and then how much can we really get done? And one of the things that I know that from a preservation side, we have folks that will say, well, you have to think about what Olmsted really wanted for the park system 150 years ago. And then I've got the other angel or devil on the shoulder, which says, but Olmsted was designing things as a visionary, and so we need to be thinking about the next 150 years. And so what would Olmsted do today if he walked into Buffalo? What would he be designing today?
Well, he might get killed trying to cross one of the highways.
He might cry.
He might cry. He might look at this whole thing very differently. I'm sure he would. I just want to remind our listeners, if they want to participate in the show, they can reach us here in the studio today at 803-0930 or 1-800-616-9236 if you're long distance, and star 930 if you're mobile. And those are all free calls. And you can even text us if you want to be more anonymous at 30930. And we've had some very interesting texts, most of which I can't read. So I'll just let you let your own imaginations go with that one. But we are on a topic today, which I think is one of the most important topics to real estate in our community, and that's the quality of life that public amenities provide for everybody, and the value of those, and how we position the value of those against other priorities in our community, mm-hmm. which is really a challenge. And one of the things that I know you have to deal with, Stephanie, is the issue of kind of project funding. We got to get this chunk of the park fixed, and we're going to plant trees, or whatever we're going to do, restore something.
Mm-hmm.
Versus kind of a general prioritization funding where you say we need X number of dollars for the whole system.
Right.
And this is something every institution faces. And it's a real decision that people like you have to make,
mm-hmm.
in terms of when you go to talk to people in the community about what you want to do.
Right.
Do we seek money just for this little teeny little project within this whole, because we got to get it done? Or do we say, you know, the park system needs this much money, period. So how can you help us raise that much? Do you go through those kind of thoughts? I mean, in other projects I'm involved with, that's a constant debate.
It is. And that's why we're going to be working with the University of Buffalo and looking at those priorities and what we really think matches up with the resources that are available. Because we also know that as a nonprofit, there are probably 500 other nonprofits in Buffalo that are competing for the same types of dollars. Mm-hmm. So we have to make sure that the priorities that we come up with are going to have the most impact for the most people without impacting future budgets.
Mm-hmm. And how do you explain things like the administrative costs?
Yeah, it's hard with the administrative costs.
I know it's a lean organization.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has to be lean today. But, I mean, is there a percentage that you define, or is it just a matter that, look, we have these costs?
It's more of a we have these costs. When we are applying for grants in particular, some grants just don't even allow for administrative funding.
So it's got to be project oriented.
Correct.
We're going to fix that bridge, or we're going to fix that walkway, or whatever.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. But we are able to pass on that from an economic development standpoint, because we're hiring contractors, we're
mm-hmm.
hiring architects, we're hiring folks in the community locally. That are then working on these projects and making these projects a reality.
And because they're effectively independent contractors, there's a beginning and end to the project.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, and I think that a lot of institutions funding your institution, for example, are going to say, look, we don't want to contribute just another headcount, you know,
right.
one more person on the staff that's going to be there forever. And we all know that once someone is on the staff, they're there, you know.
Well,
and
yeah.
There's an ongoing cost.
Well, we have 30 full-time people, and we have about 60 to 70 seasonal that come in every year. And we're really looking at our organization as a training ground more than anything for a lot of these seasonals. Now, we do have seasonals that have come back perennially. Mm-hmm. But we also—
Mostly younger people than summer break?
Some, but a lot are probably 30 to 50 years old as seasonals. We do have a lot of younger folks, but we train a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're hoping is that from the training and the experience that people have had with the Conservancy, they can move on to other full-time or higher-paying positions. Mm-hmm. So,
well, you know, that's the impact of 100 employees is pretty significant.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, at least in the argument standpoint, there's 100 people that are taking a paycheck home at one point or another in the year that are going to be spending money someplace else in the community, right?
Yes. Yes, they are.
Which is a pretty good thing. And we'll be right back with more from Miles Steers after these important messages.
If you're a homeowner age 62 or older, you owe it to yourself to look into a reverse mortgage. Reverse mortgages give seniors many different options to access the equity in their home. There's even a reverse mortgage for purchase available. For more information, call Karen Johnson, a reverse mortgage specialist at Hunt Mortgage at 633-3700 or visit huntmortgage.com. Karen Johnson, NMLS number 485939. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, home of the pre-purchase commitment and the low rate and closing cost guarantee. And I can't think of any two more important things for your home purchase, and they're available with just one phone call, 633-3700. In the studio with me today is Stephanie Crockett, and we've been talking about an aspect of our community that we all drive by and, as I said earlier, probably take it for granted to some extent, at least. But it's something that I think we can all be very proud of and be very thankful exists in our community relative to the many assets we have beyond that. And I was filling out some survey yesterday for some rating or something. And they said, why are you in Western New York? And I said, well, I like it here. Love it. I love it here. It's a great place to raise a family, all the standard stuff. But I said, you know, I was thinking about what do I put in a few words that would make any kind of sense that somebody else might not say. Now, hopefully somebody says it in some other way. But I said, we have a collection of cultural, entertainment, and sports assets that are worthy of a community much larger than ours. Mm-hmm. And what that produces is an intimacy in our community that you just don't get someplace else. If I go to Central Park, I'm sharing it with millions of other people. But I can look right into parts of Delaware Park and I can see that, you know, the people per acre are still pretty low. Mm-hmm. And you can wander through that park and sometimes you're not going to see anybody. And other times, somebody's going to walk by. Everybody always smiles and says hello.
Yes.
Nobody's looking at the ground.
No.
They're happy to be there. And that's that kind of intimacy that you have in a city our size with the assets that we have. I'm sure Olmsted was thinking that this city be a lot bigger.
Yes. They actually planned for twice the population.
And, you know, our highway system was built for the same thing.
Exactly.
Twice as many people.
Mm-hmm.
People talk about a traffic jam here. I don't know where they are. They don't exist.
I lived in Atlanta. Believe me. This is nice.
You're stationary most of the time when you're in your car.
Yep.
But we have it so good here. And that kind of intimacy, you know, and also the connection with nature that we have through the system is something that I think we just take for granted. You know, it's just something we just...
Yes.
It's there. I guess it's always been there. So what should I do about it?
Except, well, we'd like to collect stories in this year of awareness, mm-hmm. because we do believe that there are those people that have lived in the city forever, that have generationally, and that have seen the evolution of the city, the evolution of the parks. And we have pictures. We have pictures of when shopping carts and cars were in the middle of the parks. And I think that's something that people forget over time. When things are nice, you tend to forget the bad stuff, which is a good thing in forgetting. But if you don't remember, are you truly going to appreciate that asset? And we want to bring back some of those stories just as that reflection. But also as we've got people moving into the city, we've got an influx of new people that are completely taking the park system for granted as isn't this great, but they don't understand the amount of work and the amount of pride and just the sweat equity that's gone into making sure that this park system is gleaming and serves as curb appeal to the region in attracting all kinds of new residents and businesses.
Well, I could tell you stories.
Good. I want to hear.
I could tell you stories about values of properties you couldn't give away. One property right near where I live once sold for $50,000. It's probably, it's still a single family home, one of the most beautiful ones anywhere in this world, I would suggest. Magnificently built, architectural detail beyond compare, probably 3/4 of an acre of land adjacent to the park system, magnificent property, and sold for $50,000 in, you know, recent history. Not yesterday, but in recent history. If it's not worth $2 million or more today, I'd be shocked.
Seriously?
I'd be shocked. Now, granted, a lot of money's been invested in that house over a couple owners, but the fact of life is it's substantially the way it was in terms of its architecture and the design of the land. And I would guess that somewhere along the line, Mr. Olmsted might have had something to do with the placement of that house on that particular lot. But this is something, I mean, that's just one story. But you could go all the way around the parks and those concentric circles I'm talking about, mm-hmm. we talked about earlier, and you could tell story after story, house by house.
Yes.
I mean, even look at go on the other side of on the east side of the park and look what's happened with the Frank Lloyd Wright House.
Yes.
The Martin House.
Exactly. And Olmsted designed the Parkside neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, if people are wondering if they're in an Olmsted area, we try to designate those with a special light pole that's got these little leaves at the top. So if you ever look up the light pole and you see the little leaves, then you know that you're in an Olmsted space.
Well, this is the kind of thing that hopefully through shows like this and other things you'll be doing over the course of the year, we can raise a little awareness on this. And I understand you're going to be coming back in August to talk about what we're doing at the parks on the
grand weekend.
Yes.
Yep.
So that'll be something we can look forward to. But in the meantime, there's a lot of action here. Just go back to the April week again and
sure.
just kind of describe again what's going to be happening during that week.
So that week we're going to start with Earth Day. We're going to do a lot of park cleanups. And we're going to be trying to activate as many volunteers as possible throughout the city and keeping the parks picked up. I will say that's one of the things that we've fallen away from is we've taken over the maintenance. I think a lot of neighbors stopped being engaged because they were watching us do the work, and it would really be nice to get some of the neighbors back in, especially in the circles where we have heavy plantings that are so beautiful.
Or the boulevard.
Exactly. And just getting people out there and taking that hands-on investment with us side by side to make it work. So we're going to be doing a lot of volunteering. We've got Olmsted's birthday on October 26th. Like I said, Frank Kowski's book is being re-released as a second edition. And then on Arbor Day.
Which is a great book. I have
it. It's an amazing book.
It's a tremendous book.
Yes.
I think it should be required reading of anybody in the city.
Oh, definitely. And having Frank here, mm-hmm. he's a Buffalo author. So, and then Arbor Day, we're going to be releasing our study on the feasibility for the South Park Arboretum. And that is an Olmsted landscape that was never fully realized. We have all of his plans still. We have all of his planting plans. So we're going to try to bring that back to life. And we're going to be doing it with the golf course still there.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's been a bit of a question. So we're going to have a panel discussion on the value of arboretums, what an arboretum is, how it influences education and science and quality of life. And then we're going to be removing some trees and planting some trees in South Park for Arbor Day.
Another little story. I moved from one side of the park to the other side of the park, and I have one of the boulevards in front of the house there. And so I was walking my dog. I looked out there, and sticks and twigs and springtime. So I went and got the rake.
Mm-hmm.
And I started raking. I took the approximate lines of my property and went out across the island and just started raking. Guy walks along, and he says, "Do you want some help?" And I said, "Sure." So the two of us, and then a bunch of people I knew walked by and said, "You know, what are you doing?" I said, "Well, nobody else is doing it, so I decided to do it." And I just started thinking, what if we, everybody who had that opportunity right in front of them did that? All of a sudden, this would be a different place.
Yes.
And, you know, the history of that particular strip of land, you can still see the horse path,
the bridle path.
Mm-hmm. which is really, it's still there, which is amazing. Now, I haven't seen horses go by.
No, and it's funny. We are restoring a few of the bridle paths in Delaware Park on the north side of the park over toward Amherst and Colvin.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been asked recently, can I bring my horse out? And there is no ordinance that says that a horse can't be out there.
Well, way back when we first moved on the other side of the park,
mm-hmm.
occasionally we'd see a horse
really?
Clopping by. Yeah, it was kind of fun.
Well, they have the horse rehabilitation
yes.
Mm-hmm. and training center over there on Amherst. So
it was more generally a riding stable at the time.
Okay.
And so there were people that just would take their horse out for a little run, but walk, but it was most interesting, and that's really a an amazing thing. I think in Central Park they still have horse. You can take a horse in there.
I think there's areas, but the most that they do right now is the carriage rides.
The carriage rides, and of course the police on horseback.
Yes.
Which is still a cool thing to see, I think. we've got a few minutes left here, Stephanie, and I guess one of the things I'd like to do is kind of summarize, have you summarize how our listeners can become involved and what they can do. You said what's going to happen in this week in April, but how can anybody get involved? Because not just the people that live near the parks necessarily that might want to help out in some way.
Sure. Well, we have a volunteer coordinator. He's actually called our community outreach manager. His name's Andrew Lloyd. He can be reached at through email at andrew@bfloparks.org. He coordinates all of our volunteer efforts, whether it's small groups. We even have companies that try to do employee engagement and team building through volunteering in the parks, which is wonderful. Or they can become a member if they just want to understand what some of our issues and advocacy and projects are. They could become a member. We do have a nice program now of park partners from Ashgers that runs the juicery in Delaware Park, all the way to Campus Wheelworks that will help you with your bikes. So we've got some amazing partners there that offer discounts. We have a few of the other culturals that are also doing membership programs with us so that if you become a member of the Conservancy, you can get a discount on a membership at the History Museum. And that's another really interesting thing is I do not think, and I'm doing some fact-checking on this, but I don't believe that there's any system of parks that Olmsted designed that has 9 major cultural institutions right there in the fabric, which I think is very important. And when people are at the Albright Knox, they are in an Olmsted landscape. And when people are at the Science Museum, they are in an Olmsted landscape. And when they're at the Botanical Garden, they are in an Olmsted landscape. And I'm hoping that people can appreciate that we've got these amazing cultural institutions that are also part of that fabric.
Two big questions.
Sure.
We only have 2 minutes left.
You got it.
Number one, are you engaged with the Albright Knox in terms of their whole campus plan and its impact on the park? As you said, it's in the park itself.
Yes. And actually, their director, Yanni Seren, he has been wonderful in keeping us in touch. He's presented to our board a couple of times, and we have been talking with them and their master landscape architect, which is Michael Van Valkenburg out of New York City, who is a renowned, fabulous landscape architecture firm. So we have a great relationship in going forward and understanding how that project is going to continue.
And Yanni's going to be on the show in September or early October. We're not sure exactly when to hopefully unveil the final plans for our project.
That'll be
there
exciting.
At the art gallery. And the other kind of bugaboo question is the Route 198.
Yes, yes.
So I know that's a whole show, but in 45 seconds or less, how would you...
Well, we were able to get the DOT to not submit the final EIS, which would have basically just put lipstick on a highway that's already there and would not have been a sustainable highway for us. There is always going to be a road that we need to have to transverse east to west. So it's a matter of what is that right road. People get hung up on the speed limit. They need to just not – it's not about speed limit right now. This is about how do we make a road that goes through a park and connects – many different neighborhoods, really just providing the community with access, all types of access, whether it's pedestrians or bikes, in a safe and complete way. Our master plan that we talked about wants to see the restoration of the reconnection of the park that was there from the different halves of Delaware Park. That is our main goal, but we also know that this road connected way into Humboldt. And that project goes on, too, down to MLK Park. And so it's a bigger problem.
Stephanie Crockett, Executive Director of the Buffalo Olmsted Parks Conservancy, thank you very much for being with us today.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
I'd like to thank our listeners. We'll be back again next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, Western New York and all of upstate is hunt country.